Hey Podnuts, Corey here from Instant House Call. Whether you're a break fix tech who needs to provide remote support on demand without pre-installed software, or a managed service provider who wants to connect to unattended PCs anytime, Instant House Call makes remote support easy. I want to invite you to try Instant House Call free for yourself. Go to podnuts.com and click on the link in the show notes, then use the promo code PODNUTS. Instant House Call is the best remote support on earth. We can prove it. Try it free now and see for yourself.
Welcome to Podnuts Daily, episode number 416, a show for computer repair techs by computer repair techs. I'm your host, Jeff Hallish. I'm joined today by Matt Rainey from Podnuts Pro and InformedIT.net. How you doing, Matt?
I am doing average. About as good as it gets for me.
Just a little bit above the line, right?
Yeah, you know, things hurt. Things are falling apart when you get old. You know, that's how it goes.
I have a cure for that. It's called get up a little earlier and start working out. But
but you know, Jeff, that's why things actually hurt, because that's what I've been doing for the past 2 weeks.
I feel your pain because I started mine last week, so I totally understand. Yes, they do hurt. But I do feel better in the end, so I guess once I get over that hurdle, it'll be much better.
Yeah,
that's what I
just couldn't walk last night. But yeah, other than that.
Now, okay, even though this is off topic, so what type of workout are you doing?
Right now I'm just doing – I got to start slow, Jeff, because, you know, I sit in a chair like all day long, okay?
Right.
So I got to start slow. So I'm doing cardio, walking, riding the bike kind of thing.
Okay.
But I have problems with my knee. I had a knee injury a long time ago, so I still have knee problems. Something on my toe, which hurts. I stubbed it one day and it's hurt for like 3 weeks since. So I think I might have damaged something.
Right.
On my toe. And then I got plantar fasciitis in my other foot.
Wow.
So, you know, after a while I can't walk.
Yeah, that's no fun.
Just throbs. But, you know, other than that, it's pretty good.
So I guess doing something like Insanity is out of the question then.
I know that is. Is that some kind of crazy workout thing?
Yeah, it's like, you know, your P90X or the Sean T. Johnson, you know, Insanity workout. It's all cardio. It's like 40 minutes of nonstop, and second month is like an hour nonstop.
So yeah, I'm not going to do that.
Okay.
I had to go to the doctor for my knee because it would hurt so much. And he said, basically, you're going to need a knee replacement. In 20 years. In 20 years. I'm not going to do it now because you're too young.
Right.
So you're going to need a knee replacement.
Gotcha.
So don't do high impact things. Don't go running. Don't go jogging. You can walk, but don't do anything high impact. So,
yeah. I to be honest, I actually like some of the cardio stuff out there that's on DVD or whatever, because a lot of it, you can make it as low impact as you want. And, you know, you just got to know your own body. And that's really what it comes down to. And I won't tell you that's what I'm doing. But anyways, just because it reminds me of my military days, and I like the calisthenics, and I feel much better after doing it. But
I hurt my knee. I hurt my knee when I was in the military.
Okay. Yep. Now, how did you hurt you? What did you do in the military?
I was in the Air Force.
Okay.
Active duty Air Force. Air transportation.
Okay.
The first part was a mobile air transportation. So we went out to we were combat trained. One of the few Air Force jobs that are combat trained that aren't special forces.
Okay.
So we had, whenever somebody went to Somalia, anywhere, we had to go first to set up the airfield to fly everybody in.
Gotcha. Okay.
So we had to do our own security, and we had to fly in the Army. So you were in the Army.
Yeah, I probably jumped out of some of your planes.
So once y'all got there, you took our guns away. Because you didn't want us carrying guns. I mean, we're trained, but really trained, you know.
Are you kidding me? They really took your guns?
Oh, yeah. It's hard to load and unload cargo planes carrying an M16.
Oh, I gotcha. Well, I was a gunner on a Bradley, and I carried a .45, so I didn't have to lug around an M16 at that point.
Yeah. So they took our guns because they didn't want us to have guns, and they provided security while we did our thing. So I was fine to get rid of the gun when they got there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's a pain to carry around. So, no, that's understandable. All right. Well, cool. Very cool. All right. Well, I'll tell you what, I know you've got some topics you want to talk about today, some email scams going around and some different funny stories from the trenches, I would imagine.
Trenches are funny. You have to have humor, right? You have to keep your sense of humor in this job, dealing with all these clients day to day. You have to.
Now,
makes a day go by.
Could we insert the name client for clown? Would that make it better?
I think they are synonymous. As long as they pay the bills, that's fine.
Well, yeah. You know, and it's hard. Well, I mean, it does come down to customer service. You got to treat them right. But I guess as long as you're charging them, it makes it a little bit better, right?
Yeah, they pay. They can do whatever they want. They can make me, you know, when they have me call and create a user account, inevitably they spelled it wrong. They give me, I make them email to me or send it in the ticket system so I have the correct spelling.
Right.
And inevitably they've done it wrong and I got to go in there and rename it. I don't care if they do that 20 times because each one's a half hour minimum.
Okay.
You know, I can rename it every day all day long for a week. I don't care.
Right. And a lot of that stuff you can still do remotely, so you don't even have to go on site.
Oh, it's all remotely.
Okay, that's great.
All remote. Oh, yeah. If I had to go on site every time, I'd make them – I'd like have like a penalty where they had to wait like a week.
Right, right.
You know,
oh, that's good.
A waiting period for messing up.
You have a timeout.
I do timeouts. I've gone over repeatedly with clients. We have a ticketing. We use ConnectWise.
Okay.
And I've trained them repeatedly. Don't email text directly. Don't email me directly. Don't email text directly. You need to email the support address that creates a ticket in the system. That way it doesn't get lost. If I'm on vacation, if you email a tech and he's out all day long on jobs, he's not going to respond to you.
Right.
So inevitably, they always email me directly and I make them wait like a day. I say, oh, I didn't see it. It must have slipped through the cracks. So did you email support or did you email me directly? Oh, directly. Okay, that's why.
So. Oh, yeah. Okay. So it's your fault is what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. So I make them wait. I do put them in timeout and email me directly.
There you go.
Yeah. So, yeah, we had a very interesting occurrence last week. And I'll start. This is the most interesting of the show. I'm just joking. a client calls me, tells me they have a problem. And that's an understatement. I'll tell you what happened. Somebody registered a domain name similar to my client's email domain. And I'll use Podnuts as an example. Let's say I registered p0dnutz.com.
Right.
And then I email and I create an account, Jeff, at p0dnutz.com.
Right.
And I just type it all in uppercase. And I start emailing out. What's that going to look like?
Looking like an email is coming from me.
Looks pretty legitimate. That's right. Coming from you. Oh, it's Jeff at podnuts.com.
Right.
Something similar happened to a client. Except for them, it was an I and an L. They had an I in their domain name, and somebody just put an L. So when you type it all up, it looks like an I. Right,
right. Right.
So this somebody, and it's got to be targeted. Somebody emailed. They knew to email – they created an account, same email address as the owner.
Okay.
And they emailed from that account to the person in accounting that normally does any sort of money transfers, has a, you know, any kind of account transactions.
Right.
Accounts payable, whatever. So from this email address, they email this person saying, hey, I need to do a wire transfer of it's about $250,000 to this account. And, you know, being the good employee, I guess you could say, took care of that wire transfer in less than a half an hour. She was on top of it, right? Got that money out the door.
Now, are wire transfers normal for this company?
And that's another thing because the business that they're doing, it's not uncommon.
Oh, okay. Okay. Because I would have thought something like wire transfers are so sketchy even nowadays that I can't believe that companies are still using that form to get money around.
A lot of companies use it.
Okay.
A lot of companies still use it. So for them, it wasn't out of the ordinary. And it would usually come from this person to this person if they needed to be done.
Okay. So that almost sounds like an inside job, though. Somebody would have to know all that intricate information.
Okay, that's what we thought. But so they said, what do we do? And they said they already contacted their attorney, their business attorney. He told them to call the FBI.
Okay.
They called the FBI, started doing all the paperwork. Well, when I found out about it, I had a contact, a friend who works for – he's a special investigator, special agent for another branch of the investigative branch of the Air, of the United States under Homeland Security.
Okay.
So I just called him and said, hey, here's what happened with this company. You know, what do you recommend? They contacted the FBI. What do you think? He said, look, give her my name and number. Have her call me. So she did. And lucky for her, she did, because he was able to get the money back within 24 hours for her.
Wow.
And I don't even think they heard from the FBI yet.
Okay.
But here's the thing. The money she transferred was to a bank in the United States. And it wasn't transferred out yet. If they would have transferred it out to the country, the money's gone.
Okay. Gotcha.
But because it was acted upon quickly, he was able to get with that bank, trace the money, find where it went, go to that bank, present whatever he presented to them, and they just gave the money back to her or okay. to the company.
Right.
But if – and I don't know. He told me his agency is better at handling this kind of thing than the FBI.
Okay.
And maybe it's because it's response time. Maybe it's because they're – maybe that's got to go through some kind of procedure to assign it to somebody. I don't know what the problem is, but they didn't even hear from the FBI, I don't think. I mean, he already had the money back. But if they would have waited, I mean, they could have been ready to transfer the money in the next hour. And once his transfer is gone.
Right.
So talking to him about how this happened, he doesn't think – and, of course, it's an investigation now. You get the money back, but now it's an investigation to find out what happened, who's responsible.
Right.
He thinks he just did searches on his own. And if you just go to LinkedIn, most people have their whole work life on LinkedIn, their title, you know, what department. So he can go see that this person is the owner / you know, CFO of this company. He can go see that she is vice president of accounting or whatever. So they just put two and two together and
wow,
one to the other.
Okay.
Because everything that was sent and the emails that were sent is available online as far as who's got what title and such.
Okay.
And he also told me it's not an inside job because this is going on around the country and probably around the world. He talked to other people. One case in particular, somebody wire transferred almost $31 million and they did not get their money back.
Oh.
Because that money was transferred to another country.
Okay.
It's gone. Goodbye. So it's common and it's not hard to do if you just look at publicly traded companies or LinkedIn and find a company that you can target.
Right.
I mean, when I heard about this, I'm thinking in my mind, I know of my clients, at least five other ones that would fall for this.
Okay.
At least. And that's just off the top of my head, knowing who I deal with and their mentalities and their thought process and how they communicate. They would fall for it easily.
So a lot of people are not – what you're saying is a lot of people are not communicating. In other words, the owner and the person from accounting, how far are their offices away from each other?
They're not far, but he was out of town.
Okay. Okay. So this just happened at the right time. Now, do you know,
well, even if he was in the office, let's say I email Jeff at P0D. If somebody replies back to me, they think they're communicating.
Right.
Yeah, are you sure you want me to do this? Yeah. Just go ahead and do it. Take care of it. You know?
Gotcha. Okay.
Because they're not going to create a new email, type in Jeff at Pilots.com. they're going to hit reply because it looks, it's address right there. I can read it. I'm not stupid. I can read the address, you know?
Wow.
But looking at the email, it's not perfect.
Okay.
Okay.
You mean there's misspellings like there normally is?
There wasn't misspellings. You could tell it was written, you know, not like the common misspelling and grammar things you're seeing. What was wrong was this company has a company exchange, or that's not exchange. They have a third-party product on the email server that puts a signature in everybody's email. All outgoing email has a signature.
Okay, okay.
Doesn't matter if you send it from an iPhone. If it goes to Exchange server, it's got this signature. Signature was missing off this email.
Ah.
Okay. Also, his name wasn't – the email address was correct, but the name wasn't quite right. So let's say at the bottom, if I created Jeff at P-O-O-D-N-U-T, at the bottom I put Jeffrey. Well, if you don't go by Jeffrey, that should – throw off a red bell, you know, alarm.
Right.
So his name was like a longer version that no one ever called him by that name.
Okay.
So that should have been something. There was no signature, you know, but the grammar and everything was correct.
Okay.
It's just a few things like that weren't quite correct. Now, I'm thinking if this is all on LinkedIn, I could send an email to the guy, get a response saying, who are you? And now I can just grab his signature and then it would look even better. Right, because on the return email, I have the whole signature. But apparently it wasn't needed in this case.
Right, it still worked.
Yeah.
And now we just explain to everybody in every country on how to do this properly.
Yeah. It's right, so we can make it clear how to do it. I had a question from my contact who got the money back. I said, really, is this fraud? Because I'm curious what law they broke. All they did was he emailed this girl saying, can you wire transfer money? And she did. How is that? That's like somebody on the street asking me, you have any spare change? They're not going to get arrested if I give them money.
Right.
They asked for money. They gave them money.
But you know, that's still... The one thing is, I think it still would not be done from anybody here in the States because they absolutely know that eventually they would, you know, they'd get caught. There'd be some sort of repercussions. But even outside of this country, you know, who are you going to go after, even if you can trace it?
Yeah. But my answer, what they said, well, it's still fraudulent because he's not Jeff.
He's acting as a...
Well, how do I know his guy's name? What if my name is Jeff and I create Jeff at POT? Is it fraudulent?
Wow.
Because then I am Jeff.
Right.
You know, the client at first was mad thinking, why was this not blocked? They have an email spam, you know, we use Barracuda spam filtering.
Oh, wait. So what they did was they blamed the IT company for...
Well, they didn't blame us. They were just wanting to know how it got through. And so we looked up the domain. It was registered the previous day. I mean, it's a valid domain name.
Right.
There wasn't anything malicious, any code. There's no HTML. There's nothing in the email itself to flag it as spam. It's from a valid domain name. So why would that be blocked?
Now, what about – it's been a long time since I've done a wire transfer. I mean, like over 20 years. Where does this wire transfer – I mean, if the owner's out of town and he wants money transferred, you're just transferring it to where? But you said it was in a bank account.
Whatever account, you know, just like in the movies, here's my account number, you know, transfer it to this account number. It's like a check. It's got account number, routing number. You just transfer it there.
But wouldn't a person know that, okay, that's not a normal place that I transfer money to?
If your boss is telling you to do a wire transfer to this, I mean, do you really – are you sure? Are you sure? I mean
– I would be, but that's just me. I'm, you know, I'm kind of weird like that.
But then your boss would say, look, I've already told you to do it. Why are you asking me to do it over and over? I mean, I've already told you what to do. I don't know.
I would go above and beyond. I would pick up the phone, go, hey, did you ask me to what transfer this?
You know what? That's a good idea. Because anything when you talk email, electronic communication is too easy to mimic.
Spoof. Yeah.
Spoof.
Exactly. Yep.
You know, that's a company policy kind of thing. What are their policies and procedures for this kind of thing? And apparently, their policies and procedures allow for email requests of wire transfers. Not doesn't anymore.
Exactly. No, we're not allowing that anymore. Well, it goes back. It's almost like the double authentication that you do on, you know, various accounts, right? You have a phone or whatever mobile device, and however you're doing it, but you put in your password, and it says, "Hey, we're going to send you a code to your phone." You've got the phone. You look at the code. You put the code in. Boom. Okay, now I can get into that product or service.
And apparently this is common because what my contact was telling me, this is going over all over the country. I mean, it's not an isolated incident.
It's don't get me wrong. It's genius. I mean, literally genius. Wow. Okay.
I thought, you know what? I know 4 or 5 clients that would fall for this. I'm going to go start registering domain names.
There you go.
But so in the end, you know, they got the money back.
Okay.
Of course, they had insurance, so their insurance was going to pay for them out anyway if they didn't get the money back. And then, of course, we went and blocked in the email in our Barracuda any similar domain names.
Now, okay, so that comes to a good technical question. When it comes to blocking domain names of certain various types, I mean, what do you have to figure out all the different variations, or do you just say anything that's outside of this?
You can't. There's no really a filter. I mean, at least in the Barracuda, there's no filter. You got to say block this domain name. So I could block p0dnutz.com.
So you just got to figure out what somebody else might try to figure out to spoof for an – okay.
Yeah. I mean, we blocked the specific one that they did.
Right.
And a few, you know, small variations, especially if you have a long domain name. If you have a long domain name with an O, with a O or an I, it's easy to just add a 0 or an L.
Right. Okay.
And then type it all in uppercase or lowercase, you know, if you need. I mean, people aren't going to pay attention. And right. Apparently they don't, because people are losing a lot of money with this thing.
Yeah, that one client with $31 million, you got to think somebody lost their job there.
You would hope so.
You did what? I mean, I can almost, in my head, I can almost see $250,000, you know, $250,000. But I'm like, $31 million? No, I would be double, triple, quadruple checking before I wired that much money anywhere.
And of course, maybe they were wire transferring that much as a matter of course.
Right.
In normal business. I mean, it seems unimaginable to me because I don't do that. But
right.
I mean, maybe that's the kind of thing that they normally do. But, you know, again, they would have to change their policies and procedures to have some sort of check. And I would prefer a verbal check.
Right. Absolutely.
Because anything else can be forwards or spoofs.
Wow. Well, definitely, I mean, something to watch out for. You know, I mean, people are out there right now thinking, man, this could happen to, I'm thinking of even small companies, you know, even at, you know, a couple thousand, $5,000, $10,000 a pop, you know, somebody might think, oh, this is legit. Maybe this is the way they do things. And if they're doing it among a bunch of companies, they're going to get one that kind of falls into those parameters that's going to work almost in a perfect case scenario, like the company you're talking about. Hit them at the right time, everything lined up. And if they did 20 of those and 19 of them failed, but that one went through.
It's a good day.
Yeah, exactly. Real good day. Wow.
And one of the reasons I think that they got their money back is because he said they had a bunch of money transfers come in and they hadn't moved the money out yet. So they may have been waiting for other transfers to complete, which is why they didn't move the money out. So apparently, like I said, this was a lot of people falling for this, even right. for just this one person with this one account.
Wow.
I mean, the $31 million was a different account,
right.
Different group, different person, whatever, or at least a different account, different part of the country. But yeah, I mean, it could happen to anybody.
Right.
But I mean, so do we have to now go into our spam filter for every single client and block similar domain names? I mean, it, you have to, first of all, you have to think of them and right. then set them, I mean, I don't, you know, because you can tell it, you know this, you can tell a client, this happened, beware. Yeah, whatever. You know, they're not going to, they're going to forget about it the next day.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So, well, maybe that is a good rule of thumb, but like you said, I mean, the only ones you can think about, if you look at the O's for a zero and you look at the, you know, like you said, the L's for a lowercase L could be, you know, spoof for an I.
Or if it's a long domain name, would you really miss one letter?
That's a good point. No, you're right.
Because, or would you transpose two letters? If you see the, you know, they say if you see the first and last letter of a word, you'll, your brain will fill in the rest, right? You can jumble all the rest up. So would you really know a long one if it was transposed, right, one missing?
No, I wouldn't, because I don't, you know, I don't sit there and read the email address out. In fact, I love all the, you know, all the technicians doing notes for the show and everything, having to put stuff together. I can't tell you some of these emails, some of these domain names. I mean, they're long and I misspell them four or five times before I get it right. I'm like, wow. So yeah, no, it wouldn't be, it looks right. You know, or somebody will say, hey, yeah, you spelled my domain name wrong. Oh, yes, I did.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I'm not saying it's a good part-time job, but I'm surprised it doesn't happen more that I've heard about.
Right.
First one I heard about, but now that I've got this contact, he's telling me how common it is. I mean, he never heard of it either until he started talking to other people about it.
Right.
And then he's seen how many cases there are of this stuff out there.
Yeah. And I think, it, like you said before, it comes down to that communication. If companies aren't communicating amongst themselves, they're not going to really – this stuff's going to happen.
Yeah.
And email is a poor way for, you know, email's for great for quick this or that or the other. But as far as like doing big things with email, it's just such an unsafe process, but it's something I guess we don't think about until things like this happen.
Oh, well, they think it's secure. Domain name matches. It must be them.
Right.
If the domain name matches.
Right.
Not close enough.
Right.
That's pretty close.
Yeah. It's, you know,
I'll do whatever they say since it's close enough. But and again, if you get a client or anybody out there gets a client that happens, the quicker it can be reported, the better chance of getting money back. And not to, I don't want to knock the FBI, not to the FBI.
Right.
Unless you have a personal contact. I have a personal contact that I was able to text. I mean, I know him as a buddy of mine. So I got him, well, he got it on it quick. So I mean, if you don't have a personal contact, I mean, if it happens to anybody, I mean, I can give somebody my contact if they need it. They would email me. Don't email me just saying, hey, who was it? If you actually have it happening, I've got a client that got scammed. What's the contact? You know, well, I'll give you the contact. But
okay.
I don't want them flooded with questions about.
Use it appropriately.
Right. Now, you're going to get mad at me.
Yeah. Now, so you have this contact that you contact. You said that was through Homeland Security?
Yeah. Immigration and Customs Enforcement under Homeland Security.
Okay. And that's surprising. So they were able to jump on this thing. Now, I would think after this guy, whoever it was that spoofed this company, is not getting their money, I'm thinking maybe they're going to change their policy, and as soon as the money comes in, they transfer it right out.
Yeah, that's what I would think. I would think I'd be sitting there watching it. There it is, transfer, close account. But apparently, this is the suspicion is he was waiting for more transfers to come in, so we couldn't close the account. But I would be transferring whatever hit as soon as it comes. But you know, criminals aren't known for their, you know, up and at them mentality. You know, they might have been sleeping late, or I don't know what they were doing, but they certainly certainly weren't watching it quick enough to transfer it out.
And I wonder, you know, for a bank, wouldn't that be a red flag if somebody had money coming in and money going out various times during the day?
I mean, lots of businesses transfer money a lot. I don't think that the bank would do anything about it.
Yeah. Wow. So definitely something to watch out for. Wow.
Definitely. And you know, this same customer decided to implement a form. Actually, it was implemented before this happened, but a form anytime any kind of merchandise is purchased, you know, you're supposed to get a form filled out to approve the purchase.
Okay.
And there was a meeting, you know, I didn't go to it. One of my partners went to it with the owner saying, look, anytime equipment is needed, this form has to be filled out. We're not just going to order equipment anymore. Okay. Now, this could be for two things. It could be for new ownership, or it could be because the price of oil has drastically dropped. You know, for most people, it's great. You know, your gas, you can fill up your tank for less than half it did it, you know, 6 months ago.
Right.
But down here in South Louisiana, it's oil field country. Price of oil going down affects a lot of businesses around here.
Oh, okay.
You know, people who weren't – companies who didn't care about anything, whatever they needed, you know, the oil field mentality is – if you're not from around here, the oil field mentality, if you're doing work for oil field, is they want it and they want it now. They don't care how much it costs. I want it. I want it now. I need 40 computers and I want them tomorrow. We'll have to order them, overnight them.
Okay. Wow.
You know, that's how it is.
Okay.
But when the oil gets like this, it's a little bit tighter with the purse strings.
Gotcha.
So I don't know if these forms are related to that or just that's just the way the management wants to do it now. But, you know, but like the very next day, this goes back to communication. Companies don't have communication. They have communication. It's just poor communication, right? The wire transfers, these forms. The very next day, somebody emailed, oh, I need this equipment. Well, where's your form? What form? What form?
Wait, I'm sorry. Did we have a meeting yesterday? I don't remember that.
What form? You need a form to be filled out. Well, they're not going to approve that. Well, then, okay, I'm not going to order the equipment. I mean, I can't order the equipment without the form because if we order the equipment without a form, management's going to think we can't follow directions. Or worse, you know, the bad enough is they might say this wasn't authorized. I'm not paying for it.
Right.
But worse is, hey, we can't follow directions. What good are they? Let's go find somebody who can follow directions.
Right.
Right. So we can't order it. And they get mad. Oh, I got to go do all this paperwork now for a monitor. I'm like, well, I mean, that's your company policy now.
How hard can it be for a company, though? This to me seems like smart management to have these checks and balances in place to protect themselves.
Employees don't care about a company protecting itself usually.
Yeah. Well, you know, and yeah. We don't really care about the employees. That's not the point. We work for the big guy.
As long as their paycheck is in their little box on time, that's all they care about. They don't care if somebody sent in $31 million wire transfer. I want my paycheck on Friday at 4 o'clock.
Yeah, give me my $1,000 at the end of the week, okay? I know I just gave away $31 million, but don't worry about that.
But I was on the clock, so I should get paid for it.
That's right. Well, you know, coming back to that now, so you contacted this guy, you got their money back. They like throw you a little bonus or something?
No, they said thank you.
Thank you for getting our money back.
How about a 10% finder's fee?
Right. Yeah. I mean, come on. Wow. That's the first thing I would have said. I would have said, Matt, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Here you go. You know, have a nice rest of your month.
They wouldn't need the requisition form for that.
Gosh.
Yeah, but the very next day, I mean, that's funny. So apparently this person might not have been in the meeting, but yet it wasn't sent out to the company saying you can't just order stuff now. I mean, you told us, we're the IT people, but you got to tell your people. We shouldn't have to be telling your people to go get the form filled out. You should communicate to them what needs to be done, the proper procedures. But this is the same company where they'll hire somebody, give them a notebook, say, here you go, and don't give them 1 ounce of training. They'll call us, how do I log in the SharePoint? How do I check my email? Like, we're not a training company. Get with your supervisor and ask him how to do that. He doesn't know either.
And make sure you got that TPS report stapled to the top of the file too, by the way.
They don't get any training. It's a pet peeve for me because, again, they're oil field. And when they want it now. Doesn't matter if it's I want to log into SharePoint. I want to do it now. It doesn't matter that I haven't bothered to learn how to do it the past 3 weeks that I've been hired. I want to do it now. It needs to be done now or the end of the world is coming.
Right.
You know, nobody showed him. I like when I send a computer out to this company and I'll put a sticky note on the computer where the password is. And I get a call a month later. What's my password? It was a sticky note on the computer. Well, I lost that. Well, how have you been logging in the past month? I haven't logged in yet. Okay.
What have they been doing?
I don't know what they've been doing.
Are you actually working? Are you getting paid or what?
Exactly.
Wow.
I mean, this is poor. I don't know. It's a good company. I mean, they have to do good work for the amount of money they're going through there, but they don't have, and when management, when this new ownership came up, what are our needs? What do you think we need? I said, training. I mean, you got to have good training. You don't have any user training whatsoever. I mean, you give these people who are oil field people, which not to say oil people are not smart, but they know oil field stuff. They don't know computers.
Right.
Logging to SharePoint and this specific line of business application that they're now required to use. They have to have training on that kind of stuff. And they're not getting it. So
whatever happened to when a person comes into a company and you shadow somebody for a little bit and kind of get the lay of the land type thing, or you hire people that have the right credentials that actually do know things like SharePoint or Excel or whatever they're expected to do for the company.
Yeah, it'd be nice.
Is there not that much to pick from or what?
These people can't even change their passwords.
Wow.
Even though I've typed up directions with screenshots, step by step, and sent it to everybody in the company, and they still can't do it.
I work in a factory, and we have to change our stupid passwords every 90 days. And I'm telling you, I've had to help people in the past, but I mean, pretty much most of us can figure it out because that's where we get our paychecks from. I mean, our paychecks go into the bank, but to look at them, if we don't have that access, we're done.
And this company's every 60 days. This company's every 60 days.
Okay.
But what's funny is they get an email reminder, I think, at 10 days out.
Right.
Your email's going to expire in 10 days. The next day, hey, your password's going to expire in 9 days. This goes down and down and down, right?
Okay.
They wait till it's expired. Oh, my password's expired. I need to reset it. Okay. So what happened when you try to reset it? Well, it's expired. Yes, I know it's expired, but in the papers that you were sent, it says you can reset it even though it's expired. Because when you log in, it just say, hey, you have to change it now.
Right.
Well, I didn't try that. Okay. Well, let's go ahead and try it then. I mean, they don't even, but they wait till the last minute or they call on a Sunday morning. I can't get in. My password expired. Okay. You waited till Sunday morning. You've been getting this email for 10 days straight. I'm sorry, but I'm not calling you back. I'll call you back on Monday.
Right. I was going to say, do you work on Saturdays and Sundays?
Not unless it's absolutely necessary.
Okay.
And reset the password for somebody who had 10 days notice. I put on the not necessary category.
Bet you won't do that again. Oh, wait, maybe you will.
Yeah, what do they care? Because, you know, even when I've called the people back, because they might call the office like 15 times and leave voicemails.
Okay,
fine. I'll call you back. I charge them like $250 for password reset.
Wow.
Because it's a weekend overtime rate. It's a 2-hour minimum at $125 an hour. It's $250 to reset a password on the weekend. And I'll do it once in a while. I'll charge them. And they pay it. But it's ridiculous.
See, now for $250, I think I'd probably take every phone call that came in on Sunday for a password reset.
Yeah, you know what? But if I did that, I'd be resetting passwords all day long.
Yeah, but think about how much, you know, maybe you can scrape a little bit off the top.
I'm gonna give you a deal. I'm gonna give you $200 and a $50 PayPal credit, a $50 PayPal. You know, the client, you know, but the user doesn't care if it's $250.
Well, and that is a problem of the employer because the employer is not cracking down, making sure that their people know what they're supposed to do and how they're supposed to do it. And so it, I guess if a company keeps wanting to pay out $250, I mean, as an owner, that would upset me. I'd be like, what are you doing?
Well, when the oil's, you know, $200 a barrel,
right.
They have so much money.
It doesn't matter. Yeah.
They don't care.
Okay. That's just, to me, that's all. And I will tell you this. I worked for Ford Motor Company and we went through that. And money was just, we had all kinds of money. We didn't put any money into it to R&D or anything. We just kind of kept going with what we had. We were making money hand over fist. All of a sudden, gas jumps up and our market and housing and everything else just crash. And then we're in a world of hurt. We go from a, you know, vehicle lines of, you know, over 30 some odd vehicles down to about 10, you know, and it's, I mean, and I don't know if those aren't actual numbers, but I mean, somewhere around there, we don't, our vehicle line is shrunk compared to what we used to have. And it's just, you know, it's basic and simple and here's what we can sell and here's how we can make money. But we went through those times where we had so much money that it just didn't matter. Waste was like, eh, whatever. And now it's like, oh, every penny does matter.
Yeah. And then that a lot of our clients are oil field. We have clients in all different kinds of field, medical, you know, accounting, you know, just business. But the oil field people are the funniest because of their mentality.
Right.
And I'm sure if oil stays this low, I'll be disabling a bunch of accounts. And
oh, yeah.
And then look, and then when oil goes back up, they'll be rehired. You got to re-enable them, you know.
Right, right.
You know. Oh, that reminds me of one thing that's funny. Is another oil field company. It's fun. No communication. They email me all the time a work order. Hey, you know what? At least she emails a support address. That's good.
Right, okay.
Emails a support address. Hey, these – apparently we're on some sort of list that whenever anyone is terminated, it emails a bunch of people and us. So we're on the list. So I'll get a note saying the truck driver in North Dakota was terminated. I'm like, oh, geez. I know this guy doesn't have an account on the server, but I've still got to log in to the server, look for the account. And if it's not there, they still get billed.
Oh, wow.
Because I have to, it takes just as much time to log in and look for the account as right. It does to log in and disable the account. And I called her. I kept calling her saying, look, can you remove us from this email list? Because if I can't ignore it, if you tell me to disable the account, I have to do it.
Right.
I've got to log in. Now, all the new hires, I'm on the list for new hires too. I just delete the work order. And they have a call saying, hey, this person can't get email. Oh, what's the account? Okay. Oh, so you really do need an account. So I disabled the create account work orders. But the terminations, I have to log in and see if they have an account.
Okay.
And I told her, if I charge her $47.50, half hour minimum every time. And this probably happens two or three times a week.
Wow.
And I've told her, just look, you know, just open up your email, do two, look at the names in the list. If it's a name in that list, let me know if they were terminated. If they're not in that list, they don't have an account.
Right.
That's an easy way to see. But she doesn't. She just leaves me in the list. I get it. I'm like, oh. I mean, two times a week.
Wow.
Usually truck drivers over here, a forklift driver over here. I'm like, oh, I got to log in and see. I can't ignore it. Right. Termination. But that you think that the boss or whoever's paying the bills will say, why am I paying for all these $47.50s?
Right.
And the description in the work order says, logged in the server, search for account. No account exists by that name.
Gotcha.
And they get billed a half an hour minimum.
But I guess it just doesn't matter to them that much.
That's companies and their communication.
Right.
I mean, it's just to me, wasteful. Now, another client we had, they got bought out. And they got bought out by a company with an IT staff. So the IT staff says, hey, can you come to a meeting? No problem. And I know they're going to phase us out, but that's just business. I mean, it's just one of my accounts. It's not like, you know, even a big account. So we go to the meeting, and we talk about all kind of stuff. Why are they running this? Why are they running this? What's going on here? And one of their main problems is a lot of them still have Windows XP at the time.
Oh, my gosh.
And they're like, why are they running Windows XP? And the owner or the ex-owner is in the meeting. He's now he's just an employee. Okay. He has no say of who does the IT work for the company anymore. And so I was truthful. I said, we've been telling them for years to get off Windows XP. They've never approved any purchases. They've never wanted to implement any of our recommendations. I said, everything we've recommended over the past years has been ignored. And they're looking at him saying, what's going on? Why is this being ignored? I never heard about it. Okay. Whatever. So their main problem was their main line of business application only runs on Server 03 or Windows XP.
Okay.
And so we in the past, we've looked at upgrading. They've gotten prices. It was like $150,000 upgrade to new version.
Okay.
Or something.
For the special software that they need, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
They didn't want to do it. They
gotcha.
Didn't want to do it. So now they say, what do you recommend? I said, I recommend they upgrade to the new version. We can't keep running the old. I mean, it's not my recommendation to stay on the old version. That's not supported by anyone.
Right.
It's your main application. They have one guy they use for support if he's available. I said, to me, I would not run my main line of business application with this one person. What if he gets to buy a bus tomorrow? What if he retires? What are you going to do? There's no one that can manage his application. I said, you need to get off of it. Well, that's too expensive. Okay. As long as you have my recommendation, it's an email form too. As long as you have it, I don't care what you do, really. I mean, it's,
right.
I can only advise you. So in the end, they said, what we're going to do is they had Small Business Server, and this was running on Small Business Server. I said, if you want to keep the same version, we've got to put another Server 03 in place, move the application to that, and then migrate off SBS 03. So the past month or so, I was migrating. We went from a Small Business Server and a Terminal Server, both running Server 03, two new servers, one server, a domain controller, file server, print server. The other server has virtual machines loaded onto it. One for Exchange server, one terminal server, O3, and one O3 server to host the database for the software.
Okay.
And I said, okay, that's great. But this terminal server that they've had was only designed to host like five people. If we put everybody in Windows 7 and we use a terminal server for everybody to connect to, it's going to run like garbage. Because you can't have 30 people running on a 03 32-bit terminal server.
Okay. You can't even put enough resources into that server to be able to run.
It's 4 gig maximum.
Right.
I mean, I said it's going to – and of course, their management says, well, you know, they won't all be in at the same time. Yes, they will, because it's their main application. So what you're suggesting is you're suggesting they get in, enter in a transaction, close it, log off, right? That's what you're saying? Log off terminal server. And then the next transaction, log in terminal server, run the program, check it, log off the program, log off the server. That's not going to happen.
People don't even lock their workstations. They just, you know, they got, you know, 10, 15 tabs open, all these different programs, everything running. They go, why is my computer so slow?
Yeah. I said, it's not going to happen. What's going to happen is they're all going to stay in logged in all the time.
Yeah.
That's what's going to happen. So no, we'll run this way and see what happens. I said, I'm not going to tell you what's going to happen. It's right. going to run like garbage and people are going to complain about it. So here's what happens. They forget about it. We do all the migration, migrate to a new domain controller, migrate all the email. Everything's migrated. And they start complaining that this program's running slow. Okay. I know it should run slow. I mean, there's no reason it should not run slow.
Right.
Well, why are you surprised? And then, of course, then their IT people email me saying, hey, we're getting reports that this program's running slow. What can we do? Well, we knew it was going to run slow. Hey, what do you mean? I said, what do you mean? I told you in the meeting, you can't have 30 people running on one 32-bit O3 server. You can't.
Right.
He said, well, what do we do? And I'm thinking, you're the IT company for this firm now. We're just here to help you. They wanted us to do the migration because they couldn't do it. Or they didn't have time. Right. So that's no problem. We can do the migration. I'd be happy to do it. Anyway, I told him we're going to need more terminal servers. I mean, you can't have just one terminal server that many people. You should have probably three terminal servers, 10 per server. But we're going to add one more, and we'll see if it runs better. All this to stay on their old program that they shouldn't be on anymore.
Right. Now, how safe are the – is now 2003 is going out for support next year, correct? Or no, this year.
This year.
This year.
Months.
Okay. So so how – I mean, obviously, does that server go out to the net at all?
Okay. They're not supposed to browse the internet on the server. But I know they do.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
And I've told management that I can go into the router and block all outbound traffic from – or at least web traffic.
Right.
80 and 443. I can block web traffic from that. No, no. We don't want to do that. Okay. And why do we not want to do that? Well, they might need it. Well, if they need to browse the internet, they can browse it on their own computers.
Right.
They don't need to browse it on the terminal. The terminal server is here for this one application. That's it. Yeah, but it may be easier just to – okay. I'm just giving you the option. If you don't want to do it, that's fine. I said, but it's our recommendation that they should not be browsing the internet on the server.
Why do people hire us and then try to second guess something that they know nothing about? Have you ever figured that out?
And this is their IT company. This is an IT company of the firm that bought them. But yeah, clients love doing that. They love – just like everybody is a doctor.
Right.
Yeah, everybody thinks they can be an IT person. And I talked – we have a lot of doctors for clients. And I was talking to a doctor one time. I said, don't you love it? Don't you love WebMD?
All right.
He's like, God, I hate that thing. He says people will come in and they think they've already diagnosed it, and they want to specify treatment, basically, just like clients do to us.
Right.
Hey, I need a new hard drive. Okay. Why do you need a new hard drive? What's the problem? Well, it's running slow. Well, it doesn't mean your hard drive is failing. I mean, it could mean your hard drive is failing.
Right.
It doesn't mean your hard drive is failing. Just like, you know. My wife always diagnoses things like, well, I wish we really got paid for your medical knowledge here. When did you go to medical school? I must have missed that. But clients do the same thing. They present us with a solution or a course of action. Give me a new hard drive.
Right.
I mean, and if in my, it depends on the mood I'm in, I might just, okay, what size you want?
Right.
What do you want? One terabyte? No problem. I'll call you when it's in.
Wow. Yeah, it's hard because, I mean, really you're in the business of, you know, helping these companies maintain their infrastructure for, you know, what they do. And then they want to sit there and second guess you on everything. And it's like, why? I'm sorry. You know, my first question, quite honestly, would be, why did you hire me? If you know everything, why even hire me? Why not just do it yourself?
Yeah, they should. We lost a client last week because of something similar.
Okay.
He called in, and I think I'm only seeing it. I didn't even take the call. I just see the work order.
Okay.
And part of my job is I have to go review all the work orders to close them so they can go to billing. So I'm reading this ticket, and it says, you know, customer called in saying he has two computers. When he clicks on Windows Explorer, the other computer is not showing up. That was what he called about.
Okay.
So then I'm reading in the ticket the solution, and it says in the solution that he did some troubleshooting steps, you know, rebooted the computers, and after whatever happened, troubleshooting, maybe he just did a reboot, I don't know, that now he can see both computers from each computer. But then also the ticket says he would take it from here, and then he hung up with me. Okay, well, if you called in saying you couldn't see the computers, there's no take it from here because it was already solved. When he hung up, now he could see the computers.
Right.
Right? So you called, you couldn't see the computers. When you hung up, you could see the computers. To me, that seems like the problem has been resolved.
Right.
Okay. He gets an invoice, half hour minimum. And he complained about it. You know, he called, he talked to receptionist. Receptionist emailed us, me and the other partners, saying, hey, how do we handle this? He doesn't want to pay the invoice. So we look at the invoice and we're like, well, you know, it seems to be valid. So my partner actually tried to call him and he wouldn't take the call. He let it go to voicemail. And then he emailed the receptionist again saying, I'm not going to field any phone calls about this. I'm too busy. Just give me a yes or no.
Via email. In other words, I don't really want to talk to the partners. I want to harass you so that I can, you know, get this resolved.
Yeah. So, of course, then she forwarded that email to the partner that tried to call him. And basically he said, look, it's valid work. If you don't want to pay it, don't pay it, but don't call us anymore for work.
Right.
And he replied saying, I'll honor your request not to call you anymore. Whatever.
Wow. I mean, until something blows up and then he's got to figure out, yeah.
Well, you know, we're going to keep the invoice. We're not going to write it off necessarily. We're going to keep it open because if he ever does call back, we'll do work, but don't forget about this past invoice you owe us.
Right.
Like if you just close it out in a year, we're not going to remember that he has this open invoice. We're just going to leave it open. If he ever calls back and he wants something, yeah, no problem. Just pay the pay your invoice that for the previous work, and you can take a look at what you have now. But that I found that to be ridiculous. He called in for something. It was resolved when he hung up, but yet he says we didn't do anything.
But yeah, into the you know to a lot of people in this industry, I mean that's really to them it looks like you just answered my question. You just walked me through some steps, but you didn't really do anything. You know, I did everything, and that's you know that I that's just the mental game they play in their head. So yeah, it's ridiculous.
And I have to have that. You know, when the billing goes out every Friday, you know, we usually have to field phone calls. At least one or two on the Monday.
Sure. I mean,
not like everybody complained about the bill, but one or two people say, why am I getting a bill for this? You know, what is this for? Well, I mean, it's for service.
Right.
What did you really do? Well, we walked you through fixing it. I mean, even if it's just like this guy, checking a few settings, reboot it, now it works. I mean, well, we did something. I mean, if it was that easy, you could have checked the settings and rebooted, but you didn't.
Right.
You called us to do it. So we did it.
I think this is a good lesson for a lot of people out there that if you look at what you do, and a lot of times we want to be helpful to the customer, but at the same time, when you're – and I had to come to this conclusion. When I go and I do work, whether remotely or on site, I'm going to charge something. You know, maybe it's not full rate, maybe whatever. I'm going to charge something for my time that I took and help this person out. And if they don't understand that, then they can find somebody else that's going to be willing to do work for them for free, but it's not going to be me.
Yeah, go ahead and find somebody for free. I mean, we don't do work for free. Right. I mean, unless my employees don't want a paycheck.
Right.
Let me check with them first and see if they want a paycheck this week. Hold on. I should leave them on hold for a few minutes. No, I'm sorry. They said they wanted a paycheck this week.
There you go. Be a half hour minimum.
I love the half hour minimum. No, that, I remember that's, time before the half hour minimum, you know. But
no, and that's a great idea. I mean, that's what I'm saying. You can break things down however you want. You know, whatever you want to do for your company, if you want to break it down into, you know, 15 minutes minimum, whatever. But there are ways to absolutely get paid for doing even when it seems like a minor fix. You hit the nail right on the head. They're not willing to take the time and energy to search it out themselves or to do the simple thing, turn it off and turn it on again. First step.
I mean, oil change is a minor fix.
Right, true. Very true.
To somebody who is a mechanic and does an oil change, it's the easiest thing in the world.
Absolutely.
But those 10-minute oil changes are packed all the time.
Yes.
I'm not going to go to the 10-minute oil change and say, well, it only took you a few minutes. What am I paying for?
Right.
You'll do it yourself. I mean, but you didn't. And that's kind of the same thing.
Right.
I mean, I've never changed my oil in my life. I really don't know how. I'm sure to somebody else it's easy, but I don't want to learn. I don't want to do it. I'd rather just go somewhere else and do it.
Right. Exactly.
But I'm not going to complain about it, paying somebody else for it.
You're paying for service. I like your rule. If it's more than a yes or no, you're getting charged.
That's right. That's right. Because otherwise I got to do something. I got to convey some knowledge to you, you know.
Right.
Just because it's quick doesn't mean that I might have learned that over, you know, I've been doing this for 15 years. At some point I picked up a few things to make it easy for you, right. You know, the client. So yes, that's worth something.
You know, there's often times where I even think about some of the things that I do and I go, man, that was really quick. And I go, well, should I call the customer back right now or should I wait a couple hours?
I do that too.
It's like, do I want to justify my time of why they're paying me even though it was quick? It's like, but again, I've explained to other techs. I said, listen, I said, when you first start off, it might take you, and I said this in the other show, but it might take you 15 hours to do your first virus removal. And I'm exaggerating, but you know what I mean. And then you get it down to a point where you learn stuff over time where you get it down to an hour. And you're like, oh, now you can't charge the 15 hours for a virus removal. Obviously, that would be way too much unless you're charging like 10 bucks an hour. So you go on from there. But it just makes sense to me that you're going to get paid for your knowledge and your ability to do it in whatever time period you can.
If you want to make it look like it's taking longer, just put a full scan on something.
There you go.
This seems like 4 hours, you know. And then I do a lot too when I'm working remotely, and if they can see what I'm working on remotely, and I want to go lunch, I just run full scans. Just let scans run on my lunch.
There you go.
Because if there's nothing going on the screen, they think either you're done,
right?
Even though I tell them,
don't touch it.
Yeah. Standard thing when I talk to a client. Okay, I'm going to work on this. I'm going to do scans. Sometimes it looks like nothing's happening, but unless I call you and tell you I'm done, unless you hear the words from my mouth, I'm done. That means I'm not done. Don't touch it. And inevitably, they're always back on it.
Right.
Now, I like the GFI remote, you know, take control agent, yes. Viewer.
Yep.
Because I can go in there and disable remote input.
Okay.
Have you used that?
I haven't. No, I didn't know you could. I was going to ask you that. Can you disable that? I wasn't aware that that could be done.
Yeah. You can go into at the top, and it's something about disable remote input. So the keyboard and mouse won't work for them.
That's great. Okay.
Oh, I love doing that.
Oh, that's good.
I was fighting with somebody Friday. I left for lunch. I came back and he was on it again. I was like, my scan is still running. And So I moved the mouse. He moved the mouse. So finally, I went to disable remote input, and he didn't. I won the battle, basically. You know, it's mine. Don't you have to touch it.
Don't touch it. Oh, my gosh. No, that's great.
But that's nice. I really like that disable remote input. I've been using that more and more lately. Or they'll call the receptionist. Hey, is Matt done? And she's trained to know that. Well, did he call you and tell you he was done?
Right.
No. Well, then he's not done.
That's good. That's really good.
Are you sure? Yeah, I'm sure. He'll call you when he's done. Yeah. And sometimes as punishment, I say, well, now I got to start over.
Ooh. Yeah, that scan. Yeah, we're going to have to rerun those scans again. It's going to be another couple hours. I'm sorry.
Whenever you touch it, it messes up my scans. Or right. Especially they close it. What does it say? Well, I don't know.
Which is funny because I didn't realize this until I started doing stuff remotely that, you know, I can do various tasks. I mean, I get to the point where I'm running scans, I'm uninstalling software, I'm doing all this stuff simultaneously. And, you know, they don't know what I'm doing or what's possible, but So they wouldn't know whether it was messing something up or not, you know?
Yeah. Now, sometimes what I'll do for a lot of times, I'll remote RDP into a server. I mean, do business clients. And then I'll RDP into the workstation.
Oh, okay.
Because that way it just locks their screen. It just says locked into use.
Oh, okay. That's a good tip.
And I do that a lot if they're really infected and they can't open a browser and go to the web page for okay. LogMeIn is what I use, LogMeIn Rescue. Or if they don't have the agent on it because they're not a service agreement customer and they can't get online, I'll RDP to the server, RDP to their workstation. It's a good workaround.
Yeah, that is a good workaround. Good tip.
It's also a good way to, if they've got, you know, CRUD running, I can do regedit, connect to other computer, check their registry.
Okay.
That is a tip because actually that checks the registry, but not the HKEY current user.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
So in that case, what I'll do is I'll map a drive letter from the server to /// computer name /$, right? So now I've got a drive letter pointing to their computer.
Okay.
Then I'll go into regedit on the server, load Hive, browse to that drive letter, and I can find their ntuser.dat.
Okay. Yep. Okay.
Under their profile.
Right.
And that loads their what you would see as HKEY current user.
Oh, okay.
And then I can just delete whatever went out of the run or run once or whatever.
Because they're logging into the server, so that's where they're. That's basically where their login credentials and stuff are. So
when they log in, so if I log in as a different user, I won't see their HKEY current user. So I won't see what's in their run when they log in.
Okay.
But you can load another Hive. Even if you're logged in as an administrator on that computer, you can do regedit on that computer.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, load Hive. But I just do it across the server if I need to.
Okay.
I can go in the registry, look at their registry, load that Hive. But you can only do load Hive, I think, from a drive letter. So that's why I map a drive to their $C share.
Okay. Okay. That's okay. That makes sense.
So then I can look at what's going to load when they log in and delete it before they log in.
Gotcha.
And if I won when I got that drive letter map, I can go look in their temp files or look in their app data and delete, you know, stuff out of there.
Okay.
And then log in into the computer. And that helps a lot. But you got to be able to RDP into the – I use the server and then go across the network for those computers.
Okay.
And I've got some computers that are really infected. They couldn't do anything, but RDP to their computer still worked.
Wow. And you were still able to get in and clean those up remotely?
Yeah.
Okay.
So then once I get to the point where it's cleaned up enough remotely, then they can go to LogMeIn Rescue, start a session that way, and do more stuff.
Okay.
Or do other stuff, or go into, you know, the agent. Because sometimes the agent won't run either if it's really infected with the GFI agent.
Okay.
I've seen that not run. But once I clean it up enough that way, then the take control agent on GFI starts working.
What types of infections are you guys seeing on these? I mean, anything in particular or...
No, I forget the name of one. There was one where the only symptom was it was running real slow.
Okay.
People say it's running really, really slow. And I'll look at it as, you know, it's like 300 processes running. And they're all like, I think they were just like SCV host. So, you find out what is running that, and that's the infection. It's infections that are just running and slowing the computer down.
Okay.
I mean, that's the one that was so slow. You clicked on start. I mean, it would take 30 seconds for the start button to pop up.
Is that the Powellix?
I forget the name of it.
Okay. There's one that's very similar where it's basically all – you would never know it except that the computer's slow. That's the number one symptom.
And I thought maybe we got a failing hard drive or something. And actually the first time I saw it was in the shop. I tested the hard drive. It was fine. It was an i7, 16 gigs of RAM, and it was slow as can be.
Oh, my gosh.
Test fine.
Right.
That's when I started looking at processing. I said, oh, wait, we got an infection right here.
Gotcha. So.
But then so the future ones I was able to do over RDP to fix those just takes a while.
Right. Yeah. So when you're doing a virus removal on a customer's computer in a business, how long on average does it take you to clean those up?
I mean, it depends on the infection. I usually bill anywhere from 1 to 2 hours.
Okay.
Depends on how bad it is. But I also, once I've got it cleaned, I'll do all the updates, of course, you know, Windows updates, Adobe, Java, Flash, So after it's cleaned, I'll do all the updates. So usually, sure. I think I usually average about 2 hours is what I bill for that.
Okay. That's good. And you charge the same whether you're remote or you're on site, correct?
The hourly rate's the same.
Okay.
I mean, it works out a little bit cheaper because they don't pay driving.
Oh, that's right. You do have a drive. Yes, I remember.
Okay. We charge for driving.
Right.
So it's cheaper. And I'm not going to do virus removal on site. Even if they need me to pick it up, I can't catch it remotely. And we're going to more likely pick it up and bring it back to the office.
Oh, I don't know what it is. I don't want to sit in somebody's house or even somebody's business unless I've got other things to do.
Yeah, if I can do other stuff, but I'm not, and that's 2 hours if I'm not sitting there staring at it the whole time.
Right, right.
I mean, if I have to send a tech out there and he's out there for 6 hours, they're going to bill for 6 hours.
Yeah.
Because, look, he couldn't do anything else.
Right.
I mean, you took up 6 hours of tech time, you get billed for 6 hours of tech time.
Right.
And I've had that happen sometimes where they say, no, you're not leaving until it's fixed. Okay. No problem.
Yeah. I messed up one time. I went into it was a physical therapy office. And they just called me on a whim, you know, in my local area and said, hey, can you know, we've got a problem. And of course, they've got, you know, in IT guy that's a doctor staff that, you know, mess with the computer. And I go in and it was a Vista computer and I'm looking at it and I go, there's no service pack one. There's no service pack two. And this was like probably 3 years after service pack two had come out. Mm. It's like, are you kidding me? Okay. And I'm like, did anybody actually do anything to this computer? But you probably remember this. Well, I don't know how many Vista computers you have to deal with in a business, but Service Pack 1 takes forever to load, and Service Pack 2 takes forever to load. They're like almost like 2 to 3 hours a piece. It's ridiculous. And so I used to carry those around on a USB stick, and I finally started thinking, I go, you know what? What I should have done was started the process, remoted in, went back home, and finished the rest of that stuff up. But no, like an idiot, I sat there for 6 hours. And
Did you bill for the whole 6 hours?
No, I did not. I will never do it again. So I've a rate, and my rate on site now is 99. I'm like, I'll sit anywhere for $99 an hour. No, it doesn't matter to me. I'll be there. Other than that, nope. We're going to remote, or you're going to bring it to me, either or. So.
Yeah, I know. But they don't care. At least and that's the thing. Sometimes the employee will say, I don't want you to take it. I want you to do it right here.
Right.
But I mean, you got to clear that with the business owner.
Right.
At least I don't take the employee's word for it. I talk to either the office manager.
Right.
Or if it's small enough, the owner saying, look, here's the choices. What can we do? I don't listen to the employee.
Right.
That's a tip. Don't listen to employee. Yeah. I mean, they don't care. They're not the ones paying the bill.
Exactly. The owner's paying it, and they, you know, yeah. You don't want to. You want to make sure you have everything up front where you go, hey, here's what it's going to be, and that's, you know, that, and that's what I tell people. I go, there's one of two ways. You know, usually within 5 to 10 minutes, I can figure out what's going on, and how long it's going to take me. And I go, we have one of two options. Either I can sit here for $99 an hour. Or I can take this home, finish it up, bring it back to you, and we'll set it back up, make sure everything's running right for $129.
So, I'd rather you stay here.
Exactly. So what does everybody say? Oh, no, yeah, that's fine. Now, I understand with businesses, you know, in quite, you know, honestly, with this one computer, I'm sure they were the logs for the patients were probably on the server. I think this was just a workstation. So they had like three of them. Two were XP and one was Vista. This was before XP went out. And they were talking about, you know, they were going to get new computers and stuff. And, you know, I don't know if they ever did or not. They never called me back, but whatever. I was like, yeah, I'd never sit there for 6 hours again anyway. So, but yeah, it's an interesting lesson, and you know, it's a lesson I learned, and you know, now I'm going to do the Matt Rainey philosophy. If it's more than a yes or no, I'm charging you.
Yeah. I've seen too many techs feel bad about charging. You cannot feel bad.
No,
Bob Dran. If you call a plumber to your house and all he does is tighten a pipe, you're still going to get a bill.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You call a lawyer and all he does is write a letter for you,
you're going to get billed. Yeah, absolutely.
But they just treat IT work as like just to do me a favor.
Right. Well, you didn't really do anything. But yes, we did, because you weren't willing to do it. If you were, then I wouldn't be here.
So yeah, that's the one thing. Do people get into the business support or any support, home support too? I mean, you never can feel guilty about charging somebody. Who should feel guilty is a customer picking the phone up, calling somebody, expecting them to do free work.
Right. I had a lady call me. This was just maybe right before Christmas. She called me. She's in the film industry, TV shows. She goes, can you copy these types of drives? And they were hard drives, and I can't remember what they were at the time. I looked them up. When I looked at the picture of them, I'm like, well, it looks like they got the regular SATA connection, yada, yada, yada. Didn't realize that even though it looked like a SATA connection, it wasn't. So I said, well, let me come over, take a look at them, whatever. So I go over there, and she's like, you know, less than 2 miles away. I say, you know, I look at them and I go, no, I said, this is a proprietary format. It actually, even though the one portion looks like SATA, it's actually for a video camera, and that's where it plugs in. But they're different sizes than actual SATA, but I couldn't tell that from the picture. The way that her boss was transferring them, so you can only do it, it's in an Apple format. So he takes his iMac, he has a FireWire cable that he plugs into the one end and plugs it into his computer, and he copies the files to have backups before they send them out to get edited. And I'm like, you don't have an Apple? I don't have an Apple. I said that, you know, and everything I've looked at so far says basically you have to have an Apple computer because it's a proprietary format. A Windows machine cannot read it. Now, I've got FireWire on my machine, but I don't have it. So I didn't have anything in place to do it. And I'm like, you know, I said, yeah, I spent maybe a half hour there. And I'm like, you know, she's like, well, what do I owe you? I'm like, you know, I'm going to charge you, but it's going to be, I'm going to charge you $40 for, you know, my half hour time. You're close, whatever. And now before, I wouldn't do that. I just go, don't worry about it. But then I'm like going, no, you're taking my time. I'm going out somewhere trying to figure out your problem. Even though I couldn't fix your problem, you know, that's not my fault. So
you could have said, look, I'll take care of it. I'm just going to go buy an Apple. We'll just bill you for that as parts. And then we'll get the files copied.
Well, here's a crazy thing, you know. So number one, her boss never bought, when she got a laptop bought for her work, it was a cheap Windows Dell, you know, laptop with Windows on it. Everybody else in the company's got Macs or, you know, Apple laptops. And so she has no way to do it. Her boss should have known that. And not only that, the place she can send it out to was a couple hours away. She could mail it to them. They'll make copies, and then they'll send it off to the editor anyways. So that's what she ended up doing, you know. And she felt bad, and she was going to pay for it herself. And I'm like, I wouldn't pay for that yourself. You know, put it on a company credit card, you know. I mean, I feel bad charging you, but I did take my time and effort to try to solve your problem, even as, you know, as weird as it was.
Yeah, she could have brought it. See, and that kind of say, well, that kind of say, she could have brought it to you and say, can you copy this? Looked at it, say, no, I can't copy it.
Exactly. So, and then I would have said, yeah, that's not a problem. And then the other thing I started doing.
And then she wouldn't have got billed.
Exactly.
Basically, because right. You didn't drive over there. You didn't look at it.
Exactly.
But that's one thing I found is a lot of times I have a notebook that's ready and they say, well, can you bring it to me? Yeah, no problem. I have an hour minimum on site.
Okay.
Bring your notebook. You can build an hour.
Right.
And she goes, well, are you going to charge me? Yeah, it's a minimum. Okay, well, I don't have anybody to come pick it up. I said, well, that's fine. I mean, we can bring it. But obviously, it's such a hassle. They don't want one of their employees to take time out to come pick up the notebook. Why? Because it's going to cost them money.
Exactly.
But you want me to use one of my employees to go drive it out.
Right.
So, yes, you can see. You could easily have one of your employees come get it. You're probably cheaper to have your employee come get it, your receptionist, than my tech.
Right.
But you want my tech to bring it out. I mean, I'm not going to complain at all about it. We'll bring it out.
Right. No problem.
But they don't see the value in that. They don't see the value of getting charged for that. When they don't have any, they don't want to spend their time and their employees' time, but they don't see any value of us bringing it out.
Right. I think it's one of those things, and I'm going to have a hard time with this, is, you know, working for businesses, you're going to make recommendations and you're going to say, here's what you really need to do. And there's going to be things that they're not going to want to do. And I'm just going to have a hard time supporting that. What do you mean? You don't want to back up? You know, I'm sorry. What if you lose all your data today? Well, I'd be out of business. Okay. So we need to come up with a solution, not your rinky dink. You know, we're going to have, you know, Mary Jo plug in a drive, you know, each and every day and unplug it. And no. We're not doing that. That's not the way to do, you know, you're good at your business. I'm good at my business. Let me do what I'm good at.
Their solution is to never have their server go down or crash. So just keep that in mind when you're recommending the server to them. Make sure you quote them one that's never going to crash.
That's right.
Okay.
Listen, I'll tell you what. Here's what you do. Here's how we can guarantee the server's never going to crash. When you're walking by the closet, don't look at it. It'll never crash.
I'd wait for that phone call. We never looked at it. Somebody must have looked at it.
Somebody
I'm telling
did.
You. Somebody looked at it.
Oh my gosh. Well, Matt, we've talked about a lot of stuff tonight, and it's been great. I love catching up with you. I love hearing your stories, and yeah, I'm glad you made us aware of the IT scam that's going on with emails, because I was unaware of that. And that's very interesting to me to know that people are that smart that are figuring these things out, because in my opinion, I think these things are only going to get worse.
Oh yeah.
And you know, and I think it comes down to these places really have to have something in place to protect themselves, and it's not going to be email only. So,
by the way, I already registered P0DNT0.com.
Except, Matt, here's the thing. I don't have any money, so it really doesn't matter.
I might just send you wire transfer emails as a joke once in a while and see what happens.
Well, hey, why don't you tell people where they can find you at, and also where they can find your product at that you have available.
Okay, yeah, informedit.net. What that is, it's documentation for techs, and it's what techs should document. So if a tech maybe new or just wants to get organized, each form basically tells you need to document this stuff. Here's a router form. Here's a domain name form. You know, who's your domain registrar? Who's your DNS with? Logins, you know, all that stuff. It's basically, if you filled this out for each client, you would have a complete overview, or in-depth look at every company and what they have going on as far as IT domain names. How many times you have a customer who says, where's my domain registered at? How do I log in? How do I change my DNS settings? You know, this helps document all of that stuff. So that's at informedit.net. And anybody who listens and wants to support Podnuts, enter the promo code Podnuts in there, and you'll get 25% off. And I'm going to give 25% to the Podnuts Network. So you can support Podnuts by getting $10 off for yourself, and $10 will go to Podnuts for their support.
Well, thank you for that, Matt. Appreciate that. Very cool. Yeah, guys, definitely check that out. If you're using a pad and paper or even a list that you've come up with, Matt's been in the industry for a very long time, and he's seen all the stuff that needs to be documented, and that's where all this stuff came from, was from his brain that he put on paper. So you don't, yes, could you go create these things? Absolutely. Would you want to spend the hundreds of hours and years of time that it took for that knowledge to put it on paper yourself? No, absolutely not. It's quite a a really good deal and a fair deal. Plus the 25% off, you can't beat that. So definitely go out there and support Matt and check those out. And I think do you still have a free form that they can check out?
There is a free one. So I think it's under the Get Forms link. Is the one that says click here for the free form, and it's a router form.
Okay.
So it's a form everybody needs, home users, business users, everybody's got a router.
Right.
So it's a router form that's free. You can see how it works. They're all PDF fillable. So it's a form. You just, tab, type in. So all PDF fillable. I mean, you could print it and write it if you wanted to as well, but I prefer filling in file, save as client X router,
Right.
So you can easily find it when you're looking for it.
Oh, that's great in itself that it's a PDF format. Yes, that's true. Because, you can't read my handwriting, so that would be worthless if it didn't have the PDF.
Or if you get it, or you hire a tech and your tech's like, man, what was that? What was that password for that router? What is this? What did he write? Or just a way to format. So if you have multiple techs, it's a way for everybody to go in there and see what they need to see.
Right.
You don't want one tech saying, let me call this guy because he knows a router password. I don't know it. That doesn't really look good to clients.
Right.
You don't know how to access their stuff.
Exactly. And that's a good point. Yeah. Keep it all the same and keep it all neat and orderly.
And one real quick, what I found is when you're filling these forms out, you'll find a lot of stuff that's wrong.
Okay.
So not only is it a good way to document what's going on, you'll generate a lot of work to make things right.
Gotcha.
So
there you go. That's a good tip. Another way to make money.
Oh yeah. I mean, the forms will pay for themselves with one client easily. So
absolutely. Yes. And you definitely have them more than a fair price. And if people want to reach you, I know you're busy and everything. Do they have an email that they can go to at that site?
Yeah. It's info@informedit.net.
Okay, great. And I just want to thank you for coming out on the show again and sharing. I had a blast.
Oh, I'm glad to come. I try and get on more often, but life gets in the way.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, you guys can find me over on the Google+ at Jeffrey Halish or Twitter at TechNutPC. If you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, please email me at podnutsdaily@podnuts.com. If you want to leave a voicemail, call 1-888-697-0162. And I want to thank our sponsor, Instant House Call, for this episode of Podnuts Daily. Don't forget, if you need business paperwork to get you started in your computer repair business, then check out the link for TechNibble Computer Business Kit over at podnuts.com. Now, that's a little different than what Matt's got. This is, legal forms and files and different things you can use to start your computer repair business, not necessarily the documentation forms to keep everything neat and orderly. And if you guys could, please leave us a rating and review over on iTunes. You guys can help support the Podnuts Network. The next time you're shopping in Amazon, go to podnuts.com/Amazon. And I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts Daily. My name is Jeff Halish. I am the host of Podnuts, where Chris Carruthers and myself take live calls on the air to answer questions or to get answers from other computer repair techs every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern. You can check it out over at podnuts.com/live. Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.